The time for Apple time is actually 9 o'clock. We had this clock is about 3 or 4 minutes late, and so as soon as Dan Howe gives everybody permission to reset this clock, we've got to get up on a ladder. So anyway, Director Record, would you honor us in the pledge to the
allegiance?
Please join me in the salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. With that, we have introduction of guests this morning, April.
Yes, we have some guests from Terra Verde today. We also have our partners from California Family Life Center and the Riverside County Workforce Development Board.
Okay, with that. Okay, Council, I understand we have a need to add to the agenda today.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Something has come to the attention of my office that, in our view, requires that there's a need to take action. And the need to take action arose subsequent to the posting of the agenda. And pursuant to Government Code Section 54954.2, I'd request a motion from the board to add, as item 10B, a conference with legal counsel, potential litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, and that's one case.
Okay, entertain the motion.
I'll make the motion. Director Record will second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we'll go to public comments. This is a time and place for the district for anyone that wishes to speak before the district on any subject that is not on today's agenda. And seeing those speaker cards or no one raising their hands to get up and talk. We'll move on to agenda item 2, which is recognitions. Alan.
Thank you, and good morning. President Sullivan and members of the board, it is my pleasure to announce the completion of the 20th cohort of the Youth Ecology Corps program. This is our third for 2019. As you know, the Youth Ecology Corps program began in 2013 with a simple idea: bring in young adults and provide them with real work experience while teaching them about the many services provided by Eastern Municipal Water District and how they can become employees in the future. Just some quick stats. Over the past 6 years, 217 young adults have successfully completed the 12-week program with a 91%, that gives us a 91% completion rate. 24 of those young adults have been come back and asked to come back for a second cohort, giving them 6 months of work experience. 9 have been brought back as temps, giving them 1 year of work experience. And lastly, 2 have been hired on as full-time employees, which is great, 1 in the lab and 1 in records management. The success of this program would not be possible without the great partnership and sponsorship from Riverside County Workforce Development Board and California Family Life Center and HIMIT, who are both organizations are here today. Quick introductions of staff. Mary Jo Ramirez, Executive Director of California Family Life Center, and we have other members from CFLC. From the Workforce Development Board, Jamil Dada, the Chair, and we also have Carolina Garcia, the Coordinator. Jamil, did you want to say a couple words?
If I may, please.
Okay.
Thank you, Alan. I want to start by happy Thanksgiving to all of you this week. We have a lot to be thankful for. And especially for us, we have extra thanks to you for doing this program. This is the 7th year, not to take up too much time, but the way the Workforce Development Boards work, they're funded by Congress. They're the nation's public workforce system. There's 550 local workforce boards around the country. Riverside County is just one of them, and a third of our funding has to do with you. And we run 6 youth opportunity centers, and California Family Life Center runs 3 of our county's youth centers, and that's where these young youth are from. In fact, I took some of these youth with me to Washington, D.C. last month. It's an amazing trip for them. Legislators love seeing young folks. So over the years, in the 7 years that, the 6.5 years that you've been working with us, I want to sincerely tell you, we work with a lot of businesses with collaboration with our young people, but by far, EMWD's program is the best. So in addition to the two that Alan mentioned that you've hired, many of the other youth from our programs have gotten jobs in other places. The experiences that they're learning from your program helps them to get other jobs and makes them better citizens, and you are actually helping us to change lives. So thank you for that. And while I'm at the podium, I want to switch hats and I want to thank all of you for your support of March Air Force Base. I want to thank Director Phil Pauly and Chairman Ron Sullivan for being at the military dinner last night. Thank you for being there. I want to thank Joe Mawad. Last month, he went with us on a civic leader tour. And I know how busy your schedule is, so thanks for taking 2 days out of your time to do that. I'm looking forward to bringing the Brigadier General Select, Melissa Coburn, with me next Monday for our meeting. And thank you for handling all the water issues. Thanks for all the great stuff. Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll continue this awesome program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a quick question. What's going on with your shirt there?
My wife dresses me, Randy.
I know she's tired.
I think she made this and she ran out of fabric.
Yeah.
I know she took a bunch of tablecloths and put them together.
Hang in there, things will get better.
Well, works for her, works for me, because she's been my lifeline. I'm nobody without her, and especially this last year. Again, that's another thing I want to thank all of you. I know many of you. I had a rough year this year, and many of you were staying in touch with me with your thoughts and prayers, and I appreciate that. And Randy, it's always fun to have you make fun of my club.
Thank you, Jamil.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. So let's go ahead and do the participant recognitions. President Sullivan, General Manager Paul Jones, do you set Okay. First up, we have Mark Walker. Mark, congratulations.
Thank you, Mark.
Next up, Jacob McPherson. Next, we have Tashana Simmons. Next, we have Tasman Anderson. Last, we have Chloe, I hope I pronounced your last name right, Erb? Uribe. General Manager Paul Jones, and lastly, EMWD supervisors and staff. Without this, we would not be able to do this program without their mentorship. So thank you so much. Thank you, staff. Thank you.
Well, also, Alan, we need to recognize you for all you do on a day-to-day basis to organize this entire program and for the success of the program. So, Alan, very well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Jamil. Okay, with that, we'll go to agenda item 2B, which is Eastern Municipal Water District's water champion, Danielle.
Good
morning. This morning I get the opportunity to present our 2019 Water Champion Award. Annually, EMWD selects an individual that has demonstrated exemplary service and dedication in it to assisting EMWD to in achieving our mission. We've been doing this since 2012. This year, EMWD has selected Senator Dianne Feinstein as the 2019 Water Champion Award recipient. Senator Feinstein has a long-standing supporter of the district and has been instrumental in our success securing Army Corps of Engineering funds for the South Paris Desalination Program. We have secured nearly $20.3 million, and we have her support to pursue additional near-term and long-term funding. In addition to supporting our specific programs, she is the lead Senate advocate who ensures the Environmental Infrastructure Program is adequately funded each year. Senator Feinstein is also a supporter of legislation and intends to introduce her own bill bringing parity between the way energy and water rebates are taxed. So customers who receive water conservation rebates will not be taxed similar to the way they are in energy rebates. She and her staff have also championed the creation of competitive grant elements in the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation Title 16 program. And the Senator also weighs in on issues that are relevant to California. A couple of examples include when Senator Feinstein earlier this year intervened to urge Governor Newsom to veto SB 1 because of the unintended consequences to the voluntary settlement agreements in the Delta. Senator Feinstein also weighed in with FEMA when the state was having trouble securing disaster funds on the Oroville Dam Recovery Project and other flood damage. Thanks to her help, this critical funding came through. In addition to Senator Feinstein, we are also planning to recognize John Watts, a longtime professional member of her staff, for the work that he has done behind the scenes to assist EMWD in achieving our directives. John has worked many years with Eastern and helped us pursue various initiatives. And he's one of the people on the Hill who regularly reaches out to Paul Jones to get his input on key legislation as it is developed. Considering the support and collaboration that John has consistently demonstrated, we wanted to ensure that he is also recognized. And so we will be preparing and before you today as a certificate of appreciation for Mr. Watts. So we are pleased to have the opportunity to present Senator Feinstein with this recognition as well as the certificate for her staff member. Both recognitions will be presented at a later date when members of the EMWD delegation travel to Washington, D.C. So again, it is my pleasure to present this before you today for your consideration.
Thank you. Do we need a motion?
No, it's an information.
For
your information.
Yeah, just, you know, there's some other people that need to have a little bit of credit. It's the one-on-one communication that happens through EMWD with Washington, D.C. I will say for the 5 years that Director Record was chairman of Metropolitan Water District, goes a long way because Randy has a great deal of respect from Senator Feinstein as well as the water staff. Not to mention that Randy and his family hosted Senator Feinstein at a meeting in San Jacinto. Those kinds of things is what continues to make us recognized in Washington, D.C. You know that you've arrived when Senator Feinstein and John Watts call Paul Jones on a weekend to interrupt the surfing day to get the latest update on what really needs to happen with some legislation, some water legislation, which also affords us the opportunity for more funding through the federal government, whether that be the Army Corps of Engineers or that be the Bureau of Reclamation. And so there is quite a team effort that goes in, and Senator Feinstein has been a terrific champion for us for a long time. But it does not go without recognition of the people that have helped that along. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, let's go to the Supplier of the Year.
Thank you. distinguished members of the board, good morning. On behalf of the Purchasing and Contracts Department, I'm here to present the 2019 Supplier of the Year Award. First, I'd like to get into the nomination process. There we go. So the Purchasing and Contracts Department solicited feedback from all district staff for suppliers that wowed them. Each of the nominees, including goods, non-professional, and professional service providers, were screened and further evaluated by the selection team. And ultimately, one firm was chosen this year, which is Terra Energy. You got it? Yeah, no, it's not. It's not progressing.
That's what I told my wife when she bought a new batch of cookies. I didn't touch it.
So Terra Verde Energy is an independent advisory firm that provides feasibility analysis, project development, project management, and asset management services for solar, battery, and energy efficiency projects. Over the past 10 years, they've developed over $400 million in energy projects, including 80 megawatts of solar, 13 megawatts of energy storage, and energy conservation measures in over 300 buildings. So how did Terra Verde earn the distinction of being named EMWB's 2019 Supplier of the Year? Well, navigating through the complex process of bringing additional solar capacity to our facilities as part of the Phase 3 solar initiative would have been extremely difficult without the firm's assistance. They're an expert in SCE's constantly evolving programs and tariffs, and they recommended strategies to enhance value for the district and its ratepayers. SCE's Net Energy Metering 2.0 and Renewable Energy Self-Generation Bill Credit Transfer, or RESBCT rate tariffs, have their own unique rules and were utilized for this most recent initiative. Terra Verde performed an economic analysis that showed district-wide energy costs of 12 cents per kilowatt hour, and the portfolio projects that they helped us with net to approximately 7 cents per kilowatt hour. So that 5 cents differential is expected to save the district over $40 million over the next 25 years. So this is really significant. In addition, they helped us select a power provider through a rigorous process where many well-qualified vendors submitted proposals. That ultimately led to the district entering into a power purchase agreement, or PPA, which is fixed cost for 25 years and acts as a hedge against SCE's ever-increasing rates. Customer service. So Terra Verde has been dependable, reliable, and innovative. Their support within this space is really second to none, and they always go above and beyond the call of duty. So they answer phone calls late on weeknights, they respond to emails on the weekend, and even when they're at conferences, they get back to staff very quickly. The district has always had an extremely professional team and firm in Terra Verde. So briefly, you know, I know the board's well familiar with these five projects that make up the whole portfolio, but I'll run through them really quickly just to kind of make the point that this was a significant effort. So Marina Valley, we will have 4 megawatts of solar, represents a $4.6 million savings over that 25-year term. Paris Treatment, a big one, we'll have a total of 5 megawatts, with a cost savings of almost $13 million. And Sun City Treatment, or the Desalters, we're adding approximately 2 megawatts of solar, cost savings $5.3 million. And San Jacinto Treatment, within the fence line, we'll have about 2.6 megawatts of solar, $4.4 million savings over that 25-year term. And then last but not least, another significant project within this portfolio, San Jacinto Treatment North. So this one is under the RAS VCT tariff, 5.5 megawatts, more than a third of that $40 million we say was just this one site. So one of the comments we received from staff, Greg Kowalski, who's the project manager, said that Terra Verde Energy is the district's trusted and committed energy partner now and in the future. So I'd like to give Kevin Ross, Terra Verde's Vice President of Business Development, a moment to say a few words. So.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're just going to thank the board and staff for this opportunity, this great recognition that you're providing for Terra Verde. Terra Verde has a fairly significant role in the water sector, providing consulting services on all things related to renewable energy and energy efficiency. I think our partnership with Eastern relating to moving forward with the district's desire to increase and expand their use of renewable energy and moving towards an independence of energy, so to speak, with your operations is probably the largest of the current water district contracts that we currently have. We appreciate the business. I want to take a minute and just introduce you to one of the key and critical personnel involved from our staff with this project. Jennifer Petrick is here. She's our director of projects. She's been very instrumental in managing some very complex and challenging interconnection agreements for these five individual projects. Has been very adept in negotiating terms for those interconnections with Southern California Edison, as Chris alluded to. She's also been keeping our EPC contracting company on track with the schedules and has been managing the design review process as well, which we continue to do on a daily basis with Greg and the rest of the staff. So I just really appreciate the recognition, and we look forward to ongoing partnership with the district in not only moving through this Phase 3 solar project with you, but potentially other consulting arrangements as well for battery storage and other components of the renewable energy space. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, in summary, the district has counted on Terra Verde since 2016. We consider them to be experts in this field. As Kevin mentioned, they continue to help us with our strategic initiatives, and you know, the cost savings is really significant. So, with that, on behalf of the board and executive management staff, I want to thank Terra Verde for its service and congratulate you for earning the 2019 Supplier of the Year Award.
Want to do a picture?
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we'll go to agenda item 3, which is the executive reports. Okay.
Nick, in the interest of time, my written report's included in your board packet. I just want to note a couple of things really quickly. Yesterday, there was a state Senate oversight hearing on electric utility power shutoffs. This was in the Senate Standing Committee on Energy, Utilities, and Communications. They had participation by the water community, and the individual who testified on behalf of the water community was Dave Peterson, who represents as general manager of Las Virgenes Municipal Water District. Of course, they were hit very hard by the Woolsey fire. But we worked with Dave and provided him information on his testimony, particularly the cost implications of having to retrofit every pump station in our service area, you know, with a emergency generator and all the AQMD and other issues that go along with that. He did a great job testifying. One of the things that he did pound very hard on his testimony was the state had initially appropriated $75 million in general funds to help offset some of the costs agencies were incurring as a result of the power, public safety power shutoff programs. But those funds are only available to state, county, and incorporated city government. They're not available to special districts. And so one of the things he noted prominently in his testimony is that needs to change if this continues to go forward. So that was very positive. Second, I just want to note very quickly, we had a very productive meeting yesterday, and Joe may want to talk a little bit more with the operations, engineering, and resource senior management staff at Metropolitan. We have a quarterly coordination meeting with them. We go through a variety of projects. It's a really good meeting. But one of the things that was we did ask about is year-to-date, we've recharged about 17,200 acre-feet of imported Saboba water. We've also, under the cyclic storage credit program since August, taken about 3,480 acre-feet of water. And so we were asking them, with somewhat dry conditions upstate, whether those programs were going to continue. It looks like the cyclic storage credit program may be terminated at the end of the calendar year. That's what they were indicating. However, what I think was more positive news is they indicated they will continue with the Saboba settlement deliveries and really start to look at that in the first couple of months of 2020, whether they want to terminate those deliveries. And that'll be based, of course, on how the winter starts to shape, early winter starts to shape up. So continuing with Saboba deliveries is likely early into 2020, which was great. We will be taking 2022 advanced deliveries, but it looks like the in-lieu cyclic credit program will terminate at the end of the calendar year. Anyway, that concludes my report.
One question, Paul, and that's really great news on the recharge. That's, to be this far ahead is fantastic. It represents a real commitment to have an infrastructure in place to be able to do that. My question is just on recycled water storage. Is that where we need to be this time of year, or is it a little bit high, or we got enough room for
it? Yes, it's a little high, maybe about 5% compared to
okay.
normal.
So, all right, thank you.
Yeah, we track it pretty carefully,
right.
And but it, we don't think there's any reason for alarm, or because we're kind of within our bandwidth of where we like to be.
Okay.
Thank you.
Laura.
I have a small preview to Charles Dan's CIS presentation that is going to be forthcoming, but I wanted to inform the board that on Monday we launched our phase one, soft launched our phase one of the EMWD My Account customer self-service portal. And the way the soft launch is working is we have volunteer employees, and we have 47 signed up to date that are in the our service territory to test out the system. So we'll provide them about 6 weeks to work in the system, provide comments. There's a little area in the portal that they can put their comments in. They go directly to PGA, and then we can deal with any type of maybe tweaks we need to make before we have the full launch on January 6th. So I just wanted to report that.
They will not let me be part of that group.
I'd rather work out the tweaks first.
Yeah.
Okay. Nick?
Nothing tonight.
Nothing. Joe?
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. Just to add to
General Manager Jones' update on our meeting with Metropolitan yesterday. One item of interest to the board is the status of the Paris Valley Pipeline construction by Metropolitan. As you recall, this is the final reach to connect the southern portion of the Paris Valley Pipeline, essentially crossing Interstate 215 near the March Airfield Museum. The project is in final design by Metropolitan. There's been some additional activities that they need to undertake. With the recent F-16 aircraft crash near the site, that potentially posed soil contamination issues from the fuel that leaked from that crash site. So Met has conducted additional investigations. They're also looking at the PFAS in the groundwater, specifically when they have to do dewatering for the tunneling operation. So those additional activities will put Met at advertising the project for construction mid-next year, with completion by mid-2022. So we're pleased to see that they're still working at advancing the project, and we obviously expressed our need and our desire to see the final portion of the pipeline completed so we can take more supplies from the mills plant.
And to add to Joe's comments, the principal, the other driving issue they're concerned about, of course, is shallow groundwater. And they're looking at the currently proposed design was to do a perpendicular crossing of the 215 with a tunneling operation there, and then going around the periphery of the interchange to reconnect to the pipe to the south of the interchange with an open cut. They are now considering doing several tunnel borings and no open cut. Essentially, they would do a tunnel around the periphery of the interchange to be able to control the groundwater much more readily. So they are looking at that as an alternative to the design right now. But we emphasize to them how 2022, we have to have that connection in place. And so they're committed to moving forward on the project.
Okay. Any other questions? Jeff?
Nothing today.
Okay. All right. With that, we'll accept a motion and a second for approval of consent calendar items 4A through 4M.
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Agenda item 5, which is our action calendar. Agenda item 5A is approve and authorize agreement with Helix Environmental Planning for $213,986 for the Purified Water Replenishment Project Environmental Impact Report and an appropriation of $213,986. Al.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Sullivan and distinguished board members. Thank you for allowing me to present the Purified Water Replenishment Project Environmental Impact Report Award of Contract. I'll go over the PWR project objectives, the request proposals, firm selections, and the recommendations. The PWR replenishment project overviews, this was a replenishment of the San Jacinto upper pressure groundwater management zone with recycled water, as well as the advanced treatment water from the advanced from the RO facility. This will also include diluent from imported water or raw water that's also provided diluent. This will reduce our reliance on imported water, improve our drought resilience, as well as improve the groundwater quality. This will include advanced water treatment that's going to be located adjacent to the San Jacinto wastewater treatment plant. It'll use existing as well as new pipelines. We'll have a blending facility that's going to be located at Alexander Ponds. And then finally, we'll be recharging this water at Mountain Avenue West Basins. Now, production wells will utilize this water, as well as we're going to have brine management to include the evaporation ponds and alternative brine conveyance. This here is actually the map of the project. Just above the red, which is the San Jacinto wastewater treatment plant, is the advanced water purification facility. The pipelines go all the way to Ramona Expressway, run along Ramona Expressway to Alexander Ponds, where we will do the blending. From there, the water will be transferred to the Mountain Avenue West, where it will be recharged. So on September 9th, we requested five firms to submit a as-needed environmental a EIR request, proposals. This was from our as-needed environmental service list. Four firms submitted proposals. Those were SOMAS, ESA, Wooden Kern, and Helix. The proposals were evaluated by three departments: engineering, water resource, and ERC. Selections criteria was the firm's qualification experience, as well as the personnel, understanding and approach, availability, and local office, quality of proposal, and fees. Here shown is Helix. It had the highest score. In addition to that, it also was the lowest cost at $214,980. The scope of work was the technical report for Task 1. This will be done between December and January, looking at biological, cultural, and air quality greenhouse gas. We'll look at Task 2 for the draft environmental impact report to be completed by April 2020. This will include notifications such as the 30-day notice of preparation, notice of completion, 45-day draft public comment, and then it also includes optional tasks such as rare plant surveys, burying owls, and jurisdictional delineations. Finally, for Task 3 will be a final environmental impact report that will be done from, completed by September 2020. The finding and facts will be included, as well as statement of overriding considerations. The board hearing is anticipated to be either September or October of 2020. Additional option for this will also be the NEPA document, which is a category exemption checklist. This is just in case we get federal funding for this project. Therefore, our recommendation is to approve and authorize an agreement with Helix in the amount of $213,986 for the preparation of an EIR report for the Purified Water Replenishment Program and an appropriated fund for $213,986. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Do you have any questions of staff?
Approve.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Let's go to 5B, which is approve and authorize the administrative award of contracts for the Paris II Reverse Osmosis Treatment Facility Monitoring and Reporting Plan Pilot Study and appropriation of $179,815. Now.
Good morning again. This is the Paris II RO treatment facility, specifically the pilot study. I'll go over the Paris II RO treatment facilities, the monitoring reporting plan, the pilot study itself, and the cost breakdown, and then finally the recommendation. So the Paris II reverse osmosis treatment facility project, this was to manage migration and treatment of degraded groundwater from the Paris South groundwater management zone. We received a $22.6 million funding from the state on Prop 1 for this project. The project component consists of two items. First one was actually the facility, the Paris 2 RO facility, as well as wells associated with that. That's a 5.4 MGD reverse osmosis facility. The other one is a monitoring and reporting plan. This supports the implementation for the Paris 2 RO reverse osmosis treatment facilities. And it looks over a 20-year period for the project. This includes a description of the wells and associated facilities, the goals, objectives, desired outcomes, our plans for monitoring, assessing, the reporting requirement, and also includes a quality assurance program. The monitoring reporting plan was accepted by the state on June 17th. These are the listed departments that reviewed this. This is a living document, meaning that not only is this the official one, but it will change over time as we discover new items. So the Paris II project, again, will look at what we call the chemical potential of concerns, the COPCs. These are TDS, nitrate, perchlorates, and PFAS. The MRP also identifies the wells, how we're going to measure, monitor, and evaluate over time. So instead of monitoring those COPs and Cs, we're utilizing TDS or nitrate as what we call intrinsic tracers. The idea here is if we remove TDS and nitrates from the groundwater, we will also remove the other chemicals of potential concerns. The way we're looking at this is we're going to use data loggers or SONs. They're an existing technology. They give us real-time measurements. They're faster, and we predict that they're going to reduce our cost versus the discrete sampling that needs to be done to get the analysis. So the state has required us to conduct a pilot study to confirm this applicability, which is a different type of method for monitoring this project. So the objective of the study is to confirm the SOS technology that we can use this for a plume delineation. We'll look at this, our proposals for a long-term monitoring of wells across different depths or screens for the aquifers. To the right here is a diagram as the SOS are dropped at a constant rate, we're going to see different conductivities, and those are just the water quality that we're seeing at different depths. So one of the other things that we're looking at is testing and optimizing the procedures that we presented to the state. This will be the deployment rate, which is going to be 6 feet per minute, as well as the optimal measurement frequency, which is 2 to 7 seconds of capturing data. The sound selection that we proposed is the AquaTrol 600. It's a multi-parameter sound. This records depth, TDS, conductivity, temperature, dissolved oxygen, turbidity, pH, and ORP. We also selected SUNA for nitrates, and we only have a separate type of sound because nitrates at depths becomes a problem. We've been utilizing this sound. It's used in the ocean and can handle the deeper depths for looking at nitrates, and so that's why we're utilizing two different sounds. The pilot study plan, we're planning to do two sites, and we're selecting the Webber Water Company Well 11 and EMWD Well 77. These are inactive wells. Currently, there's no pumps that are located here. They're open casing wells, so they make them ideal for us to deploy the SOS. They're graded in 4-inch casing. They're also, because they were production wells previously, they're screened in multiple aquifers. And finally, they also have historical data. So when we do the pilot study sampling plan, the state and region board would like to attend. We're needed to give them a 30-day notice. Right now, we're looking at January to do the study. We'll do calibrations. We'll arrange the SOS, deploy them at 6 feet per minute. We'll look at the vertical profile, and then we'll also, in turn, collect 3 discrete samples along with these SOS samplers. We'll analyze the data as well as conduct a test for those chemicals, and then finally, we'll create a report to determine acceptability. So for the project, our cost breakdown, the first 3 is actually EMWD's cost. It's about $50,000. For the rest is for contract as well as materials. That comes up to $88,000. We have contingency of 30% or $41,400, bringing the total of $179,850. So our recommendation is to approve and authorize the administration award of contracts for the Paris 2 RO osmosis treatment facility pilot study and appropriate $179,815. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Have any questions, Al?
Very innovative.
Yep.
We plan to do this also with the Parish North. So this will go a long way if this is proven out.
Okay. So we'll accept the motion in a second.
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, Al.
Agenda item 5C, which is approve and authorize the outdoor water use efficiency program. Good morning.
Morning. President Sullivan, members of the board, thank you so much for this opportunity to present a proposal for the new outdoor water efficiency program. It essentially restructures our existing conservation programs and budgets to promote a holistic approach to landscape transformation. A little background, our most popular program over the last few years has been the turf transformation program. Customers have transformed over 9 million square feet since 2014. Public agencies have contributed $16.4 million in rebates for a public agency cost of about $1.75 per square foot. Really, it's been across the board. All of our customers groups have participated with about half of the square footage being converted at homes. The cost share has been a success story. We were fortunate to get grants both from the state and the Bureau of Reclamation for $2.6 million, which with our contribution at EMWD of $1 million, we leveraged into about 3.5 million square feet of turf. And additionally, we were able to install educational gardens at Columbia Triple Crown May Ranch Elementary, as well as Vista Verde Middle School, which have been very popular and are still used by the students. The majority of the funding was contributed by Metropolitan's program, $12.8 million. Just a timeline view here. It really is the story of the drought declaration, the emergency declaration in January 2014 that kicked into high gear every agency's programs. And initiated an increased rebate for Metropolitan of $2 a square foot, and then a $450 million investment, so that by between 2014 and 2016, EMWD customers had installed almost 9 million square feet, or transformed almost 9 million square feet of turf. The rebate was suspended by Metropolitan, and shortly thereafter, the drought emergency in 2017 was lifted. You can see this is a year-on-year view here, that the vast majority of the turf was as a result, I think, of the drought emergency and that investment by Metropolitan. Just last year, Metropolitan did reinstate the turf rebate for $1 a square foot, and then this year has increased it to $2 a square foot. This graph is typical, I think, of every water agency I've talked to in Southern California. They've seen the same kind of reduction in activity. And it really begs the question for us, so what do we do now? What are the next steps here to get our programs back and stimulate them to get more activity? One place we look for those answers is this national survey that was conducted by the Alliance for Water Efficiency. They talked to about 3,500 customers who participated in transformation programs, mostly in the western United States. And they had some very interesting results, we think, that very few customers really feel comfortable going out, particularly residential, and converting their landscape themselves. A little over half, actually two-thirds of the customers spent $6,000 or less on their homes, transforming them. Most of the customers did transform all of their turf. They didn't feel the need to keep any of the turf on their properties, although there was a group that very much wanted to have some turf left over. What everybody liked were shrubs and trees and flowers. There was quite a number, 69% of the responses, responders did say they did want to have some turf left at their property. One of the most important takeaways for us was the look and feel of the landscape, as well as low water use, was most important to most customers. And we've seen that be the case here in the district, where if people aren't happy with the look, and the aesthetic appeal of their landscape, they will take out the drought tolerant and put back in lawn. So that's very important. When we looked at the obstacles and opportunities we're facing, first and foremost, landscape transformation is just not on most people's minds right now, like it was during the drought. 75% or more reduction in program activity all across California, actually. The media is not focused on it. Of course, it's expensive for customers. And very importantly, we just don't have a good contractor base, particularly for small projects, homeowner projects, that can go in and do these projects for folks. People have a hard time contacting somebody that can do a good job for them. So what we'd like to do and propose today is a program that will make it as easy and rewarding as possible for customers to participate, starting with a design, always starting with a design that they're happy with, they kind of a vision that they want to accomplish at their property, whether it's residential or non-residential. The easiest possible application process. One of the things that the survey results returned was that really to get people kind of over the edge to want to do these kinds of transformation projects, they want to have 75% of the cost covered by incentives if possible. Contractor training, we are proposing to have a very specific training for contractors in our area on EMDO, on this program, to really make sure that the contractors have hands-on skills to do all these activities. And then a new approach by having conservation staff really be holding the customer's hand from beginning to end on this project. Sort of the intermediary between Metropolitan's programs, certainly complementary to Metropolitan's programs, but letting them know that our staff is here for them all the way through the process. Just as an example, a graphic example of what we're talking about in terms of a step-by-step approach, really we would like this program to be easy enough to apply for on your smartphone, starting with choosing a design that would fit your lifestyle. Again, these are residential examples, but it would also be for commercial or schools. What is it they're really trying to get out of their landscape? How do they want to use it? We would propose to prepare four different examples, landscape plans, for each of these major types of landscape styles, so that customers could, for free, off of the program website, print out a pretty comprehensive set of plans, not only pretty pictures, but also the irrigation and planting plans, that they could essentially hand to a qualified contractor, have an idea of what it's going to cost, and feel confident that they're going to get something at the end that's important, that they're going to enjoy. Certainly provide a generous incentive to help them remove the unwanted turf. Some state-of-the-art irrigation equipment out there now, again, that all works on web, on smartphones and is tied into the weather. Put in drought-tolerant, climate-appropriate plants, and most importantly, have them end up with a landscape that they're really going to enjoy and want to keep for many, many years, and not convert that back to water-thirsty turf. So here's kind of the outline of the program, again, starting with landscape design. We'd like to continue the landscape architectural assistance that we're offering to public agencies. We would propose to add $1 a square foot to Metropolitan's current $2 a square foot turf rebate. That's something we could do immediately, you know, within a very, very short term period of time. We've talked to Metropolitan, they're happy to work with us on that. It would allow our customers to have up to $3 a square foot. We'd also like to propose that BMWD allow customers to invest some of their own funds through on-bill financing, so that if they want to kind of upgrade the landscape a little bit more to get that result that they're after, we'd be able to help them with that. Of course, the efficient irrigation system and the training I discussed, both for homeowners going to their neighborhoods, not making them come to us, really meeting them where they live and work, and then also very robust professional training for certification for landscapers, specifically for EMWD programs. We propose that all customers would be eligible, and that if they're going to partake in the increased rebate for turf replacement, they replace all non-functional turf on their site, and then really comprehensively address the irrigation and the smart control and management of that landscape as well. We'd also would like to ask them to put in a little bit more plant material. At Metropolitan, they're requiring 3 plants per 100 square feet. We'd like to suggest 5, again, to bring up the aesthetic value, and also require them to provide a planting design. And customers that want to participate in on-bill financing would obviously have to be in good standing. This is our menu of incentives. Just starting at the top line of turf transformation. Again, the $1 a square foot that we're proposing that EMWD would contribute or add to the $2 a square foot that Metropolitan is currently offering. The final column there, the discretionary customer expenses, really is put there as an example where we know from experience that having a $3.50 a square foot incentive is enough to really put in a nice landscape, planting landscape. But some customers are going to want to put in granite walkways and other things. And they could spend certainly up to another $10 a square foot if they wanted to for non-turf transformation related items. Most of the other items there on the incentives already exist. We would want to continue those. The exceptions or the new things would be the residential and professional training jobs. So just a couple of examples. A residential customer that used one of our free designs, they decided they wanted to replace the 1,200 square feet of their home, which is kind of the average. They wanted to spend a little bit more than the incentives would cover, $4 a square foot, and they wanted to spend a little bit more on their smart controller. There's all a range of prices on that. So in this case, the incentives would cover almost everything except for $1,296. Which they could opt to put on-bill financing to pay off on a monthly basis on our bill.
And can I just ask, on the on-bill financing, that's interest-free, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. We're not going to charge them interest.
No.
That. Okay.
And for the second customer, public agency and school district, similar kind of a scenario of 2,500 square feet, which is average for those properties. Mm-hmm. Everything would be covered by the incentives in this case, except, again, an upgraded controller, smart controller. So they would, again, end up with a small amount of difference that the incentives would cover that they could finance on bill. The budget is really, this is the existing budget for conservation programs, and the program is designed to take advantage of that, to use every penny of that. We have moved some of the categories there, most notably the marketing and outreach, which we found through Metropolitan programs and other agencies' programs is really key to having the highest participation rate. And
so that budget was already authorized in our budget approval process, just to be clear.
Thank you. We are recommending that a marketing firm that specializes in these kinds of programs be hired through an RFP process and really look at it in long range. Conservation is a way of life, a personal approach. We've got a lot of feedback from our customers directly. You know, they all have individual needs and desires with their landscape. It's not a one size fits all. In other words, we want to really tailor our program to that. And do a lot of outreach with PGA and conservation staff. Again, going to where people work and live, their homeowners associations and so forth, and then trying to cover every base in terms of marketing outreach opportunities. Our recommendation is please approve and authorize us to go ahead and add $1 per square foot to the existing metropolitan rebate as quickly as we can, and then over the next year to allow us to go ahead and develop this program, get all the working parts in place, including the Hondo financing and the web microsite and those kinds of things. And happy to take any questions.
So has there been any analysis done to look at the possibility of someone, because of the reduced use of water, they go into a different tier? Or is that going to be offset by a different budget? Because a good incentive would be that, you know, here's what's going to happen to your mm-hmm. to your monthly bill. And I don't know how difficult that is to do for every application, but it should be. I would like to think it would be something we want to look at and see if there's a, it could be a great incentive that really doesn't cost us anything to provide except some staff time.
Well, just to respond to that, one of the things we've talked about before is when we provide funding for a turf retrofit program and they remove the non-functional turf, if it's an older resident and they are on a higher allocation, because the older, I think, what are the allocation for the oldest residents? Is it 0.8 of ET versus new ones are 0.55? So we would move them down to the 0.55 budget. So the idea is you'd go back in and they would no longer enjoy the 0.8 ET budget of the historic customers. We would readjust their allocation based on that.
So it's not like there's going to be benefit to the customer?
Well, the benefits of the customers, they're going to use less water.
Right.
So they will see a lower water bill. But I don't think we want to give them an overly generous budget for converting their turf. I think their budget needs to be commensurate, you know, with the type of landscaping they have in there.
Right.
And that's what we've done in the past, and I would imagine that's what we'd want to continue, because we are making an investment in these customers. I think we need to bring them down to a lower budget and lower budget standard.
Right.
If you concur with that. I mean, if the board concurs with that. The other thing to point out is while we will be really doing the marketing outreach, bringing in the marketing consultant to do, I would call, the very broad public launch of this in fall of 2020, one of the reasons we want the board to approve the additional $1 now so we can offer the $3 is we have quite a number of customers. That, and I shared the list with you, Director Record, when you were asking about this, that we believe are ready to convert right now. In other words, it's a number of school, institutional customers, commercial customers, HOAs, that if they, we have actually met with, contacted with the staff, or had a discussion with their representatives, who have indicated that if the $3 is made available, that they would initiate a turf conversion program. So this isn't what we're asking. Part of, again, the request for the board is to authorize that now so we can get a running start, get some of those larger customers converted in the process of converting, as we're at the same time developing the outreach and the marketing materials for the more broad public launch among our customers in fall of 2020.
Okay. I think with the way this winter rainfall is going, there might be more people interested sooner than later. I'd move approval.
I kind of just one question before we... On the multifamily, I noticed that was about 1%. Is that, in your opinion, is there a way of maybe engaging those folks a little more through the apartment association or something so they're participating at a higher level?
We would very much like to, and again, the the broad focus of this program is to reach out to every single, you know, stakeholder group like that. One of the problems for, we think, for the lack of participation is, you know, they don't usually have, or they don't always have, a separate landscape meter. It might be a combined landscape meter, and it's hard to kind of figure out what's being used for the landscape and what isn't. But there's a relatively small amount of water used for the landscape, but we think that there are certainly ways to reach out to them. Absolutely.
Good. I'll second your motion then.
Okay. Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Whenever they come in with the outreach consultants, you know, I hope they go to the HOAs to do something, but I'm finding in my own neighborhood where we have probably 50-50, whether we have turf or we have the fake turf or drought-tolerant plants. Somebody comes in and they have turf down, and the first thing you know after they have purchased the house, they rip it out. So they have no knowledge to comply with taking a picture, doing the other stuff to qualify for the rebate. And so at some point we need to figure out, you know, how strict are they going to be to deny something when no one knew how to do it in the first place. I know it's happened to me, happened to my next door neighbor. I mean, she, you know, I don't tell a retired police lady what to do, so.
How many ladies do you tell what to do?
To none.
Police or not.
Police or not. But it would just be helpful because it was ripped out before we could do anything, you know.
Well, and we believe that by having our staff, MWD staff, really working one-on-one with our customers, you know, on a more personal customer level, will help with those kinds of situations.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Got a vote.
Oh, yes, we need a vote. They've been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay, with that, we'll go to item D, which is approve and authorize the West San Jacinto Basin Groundwater Monitoring Program for calendar year 2020 and the appropriation of $274,887.
Good morning, Director.
Good morning.
President Sullivan, members of the board. Actually, we're going to cover items D and E. Is
okay.
That okay with you in this presentation?
Perfect.
Because they're the groundwater monitoring programs for our basin.
Okay.
So I'm going to go through just an overview of the location of the programs, the program components, the estimated 2020 budget, as well as our staff recommendation. So shown on this figure is the DWR Bulletin 118 San Jacinto Groundwater Basin. On the east side, it's adjudicated, and it's referred to as the Hemet San Jacinto Groundwater Management Plan Area. On the west side, since the passing of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, we now refer to the western portion of the basin as the West San Jacinto Groundwater Sustainability Agency Area. So on the west side, EMWD is the Groundwater Sustainability Agency. We're responsible for the management of our basin, and so the reporting and monitoring is our responsibility. On the east side, we work really closely with the Hemet San Jacinto Water Master, and we're also contracted to perform the monitoring for them and prepare the annual reports, but that cost, as you'll see later on, is reimbursable by the Hemet San Jacinto Water Master. So the components of the program include collecting water levels semi-annually, collecting extractions monthly, and also performing water quality sampling and testing annually. We also track a variety of other information, including precipitation monitoring from the weather stations that are in our basin, imported water that include both State Water Project water and Colorado River water, recycled water, and the customers that they go to, really trying to track the water budget, what's coming in, what's going out, to try to sustainably manage our basin. And so another component that's going to be added to the West San Jacinto Monitoring Program is the Paris 2 ROTF monitoring reporting that Al went into utter detail about. I'll kind of touch base on it, a little bit of information on it in the next slide. But that will be included as part of our GSA reporting. Other services rendered to the participants are inactive well capping and sealing, meter installation and repair, as well as Eastern is the lead agency to report extractions to the State Water Resources Control Board. So on behalf of the participants of the program, we report that annually at no fee or cost to the participants of the program. So just to touch a little bit about the Paris 2 monitoring reporting, it's a 20-year program that was a requirement of the grant and that we got for the construction of the Salter. We delineated our project area and the constituents of concern that affect our water quality include TDS, nitrate, perchlorate, and PFAS. So we prescribed a 20-year monitoring schedule, and pretty much the essence of it is to be able to track the effectiveness of the desalter, desalters on the quality and also to control the lateral extent of the contamination in both the Paris South and the Lakeview groundwater management zones. So we'll be performing open casing monitoring, which include deploying the sondes as well as collecting depth discrete samples. Once the state's on board with that approach, then we can eliminate the depth discrete sampling and then also collecting composite groundwater quality samples from our production wells. So just to summarize the cost for the West San Jacinto program, we're estimating the cost at about $274,887 for the 2020 calendar year program, as well as $194,102 for the Hammond San Jacinto Water Master monitoring and reporting costs. And so our staff recommendation is to approve and authorize the continuation of the groundwater monitoring programs, both for the west side and the east side, appropriating $274,887 as well as $194,102 respectively. Also keeping in mind that the program cost for the Water Master is reimbursable. Any questions?
I would move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval of agenda items 5D and E. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Motion
carries. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Okay. Let's take a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and start the information items. And then at some point this morning, we'll suspend just for a few minutes to take the EMWD finance thing. So
that can be anytime after 10.
Yeah.